Hello, VetBlast podcast listeners. Did you know that you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. Thanks for listening. This podcast is going to be officially race approved for 0.25 CE credit hours with none other than the Dr. Rob Silver. How are you, Dr. Silver?
I am just stupendous today, Alan.
So glad. It's all good. Yeah. Dr. Silver is the chief editor officer for Real Mushrooms. I mean, oh my gosh, Dr. Silver, there's so many wonderful things that we're learning about the medicinal properties. And specifically this podcast, we're going to talk about what is this mushroom for?
Commonly that's the first question I get. What's it for? Now I'm just going to go and talk about a few specific mushrooms and give a few of what I think are their highest callings for the veterinary practitioner. There's only so much time available. I could spend a full podcast on a single mushroom. There's so much information and still not have enough time to cover it all. So we'll do our best to cover the most salient points. And I'll start with turkey tail, since we kind of bashed that a little bit in the first podcast. And turkey tail has been used historically for hundreds of years in multiple different cultures. Asian cultures are big with mushrooms, but also Eastern European cultures are also very, very, very popular using mushrooms medicinally and for their culinary value. And turkey tail is found in so many different cultures. Its primary use has been to treat cancer. Secondary, it does have a benefit as an antiviral. I recently, after 2.5 years, actually contracted COVID. And the first thing I reached for was my jar of turkey tail capsules and took a pretty high dosage of it and did pretty well. But I don't know if it was just the turkey tail or my immune system. Or all the different factors. But anyway, that was my choice for turkey tail in that regards. And certainly if I were personally diagnosed with cancer, God forbid, I would also reach for that bottle. So I think that although the study was not successful, it wasn't a study of the whole turkey tail mushroom. It was a study of one pharmaceutical isolate from the mycelium of the turkey tail grown in a special nutrient broth. And it has been used in Asia for 20 years, I believe. I think it was first found in mid-1990s. It's been used for about 20 years concurrently with chemotherapy in human cancer patients, with anecdotally at least a great deal of success. We've seen some published studies for that extract in humans and for the whole turkey tail mushroom in humans with some degree of success. But hemangiosarcoma is a particularly nasty disease. I'm not sure anything is going to be able to address it in a natural fashion, but we certainly can modify its course of action. We can turn it into a chronic disease and extend their lifespan to some extent. I believe the whole turkey and tail mushroom, with the huge number of beta-glucans and triterpenes that they contain, would be an appropriate mushroom to choose in spite of the failure of the study for that one extract from the turkey tail mushroom. It's actually not turkey tail mushroom from the turkey tail mycelium. I would dose it quite high. We discussed the dosing in one of the earlier podcasts. I've developed a algorithm for dosing mushrooms using their beta-glucan content, because most mushrooms have a standardized beta-glucan content. Real mushrooms make sure that their products are all standardized to have the same beta-glucan content. So by using that beta-glucan content for creating an effective dosage, the beta-glucans are created in a fixed relationship with the other actives in the mushroom. So that allows me to use it as a marker compound, and it has been very effective when I've been using these dosing algorithms. For cancer, I recommend 10 to 30 milligrams per kilogram of beta-glucan per day. And that has been borne out with other studies where I've reverse engineered cancer studies that were successful using beta-glucans from mushrooms, reverse engineering the beta-glucan dosage. Okay, so that's turkey tail. And I think it's a reasonable choice. I think it's a good choice based on the evidence for cancer in our veterinary species. The next mushroom I want to talk about is lion's mane. And today, lion's mane is the most popular mushroom in the United States, primarily because it has anxiolytic properties, it helps the body to reduce stress, it improves memory, and to top it all off, if you can find the fresh lion's mane mushroom, it has got to be one of the tastiest edible mushrooms out there. When I find it, what I like to do is I cut it into fairly thick slices like steaks, and then I saute them in a pan under heat, and they're very, very tasty like that. So lion's mane, both the mycelium as well as the whole mushroom, have been found to contain these diterpenes and these triterpenes. And these diterpenes and triterpenes have both been found to have a benefit in terms of the growth of new nerve cells. They stimulate brain-derived nerve growth factor, and they also contribute as terpenes to this relaxation effect that we see with lion's mane mushroom. Now, lion's mane mushroom has 25% beta-glucans. So for any application for beta-glucans for immune system benefit, for cancer, for viral diseases, lion's mane would work just as well. Traditionally, they used lion's mane for upper GI problems, gastritis primarily, but also for gastric cancer and esophageal cancer. So it could be used if you had some GI issues as well, particularly with gastritis. Lion's mane, it's a great mushroom, and it's very tasty. It would be very applicable to the feline patient because its taste is so bland. It just maybe a very slight little fishy taste, but primarily bland. So it should blend in very well with some wet food. Not all mushrooms are that edible in the regards because of the triterpenes that they contain, which can be very, very bitter. Now, I want to talk about two other mushrooms combined, which is one called reishi. The botanical name for reishi is Ganoderma lucidum, and the other mushroom is called chaga. Chaga is really a canker that grows in reaction to the mycelium growing into a birch tree. So if you've ever seen a tree that looks like it has a cancer on it, that could be chaga. And chaga actually is used traditionally to treat cancer, based on what we call the doctrine of signatures, which is that the ancient people would choose what a natural product looked like as what it would treat. Amazingly enough, it actually is borne out to be true. It doesn't, as objective scientists, we go, that really shouldn't work. But I can quote for you numerous plants that look like organs that we have actually now derived analysis of their components to find out that they actually do affect them. Anyway, so chaga looks like a cancer on a tree, so it's been used to treat cancer successfully. But what I want to talk about is that both reishi and chaga contain triterpenes that reduce mast cell membrane degranulation. So either of them or both of them could also be very good partners to use in a program where you're treating atopy and hypersensitivity. Beta-glucans could help to stabilize the immune system, and the triterpenes could help to stabilize mast cells to reduce the symptomology that we see with atopy, for instance. So that's reishi and chaga, and well worth looking at. Reishi is the mushroom considered to be the mushroom of immortality and has so many applications. One day I'm going to do a podcast just on reishi alone. The last mushroom the next to last mushroom, because I want to talk about chaga again, let me finish with chaga, which is that chaga is not a mushroom, okay? It's mycelium. The mushroom is what looks like a mushroom. It's that fruiting body that contains the spores that then drops the spores, which then germinate and turn into mycelium based on the life cycle. Mushrooms bear the spores. Mycelium, just they grow on bread, they grow on trees, they grow on liquid culture. So the chaga is this mycelium that grows on the birch tree and causes the reaction in the birch tree. But interestingly enough, there's something called betulinic acid that's common to birch trees, which is also a triterpene that has anti-cancer properties, antihistaminic properties, and it is from the birch tree that the chaga derives a lot of its potency. So, and this is an interesting topic, which is that Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Nobel Prize winner in literature, he wrote a book called Cancer Ward, which documented his trials in the prisons, in the Russian prisons, in the gulag. When he got cancer, he reached for the chaga and he was able to treat himself successfully for that. The last mushroom I want to talk about, and I could go on forever about these mushrooms because they have so many different wonderful.
Yeah.
Do we have time still for a little
more? Yeah, go for it. It's just so interesting as you're talking about these. Yeah.
I'm totally fascinated by this stuff. You know, I understand there's this huge, just like with cannabis, there's a huge interest these days in pet owners and veterinarians and lots of folks about mushrooms. And they're real similar, you know, because it's like cannabis, you've got THC, just like mushrooms, you've got psilocybin, but really the bulk of cannabis and the bulk of mushrooms are healthy, you know, and are, you know, they're not intoxicating, they're going to benefit the health. So the last mushroom I want to talk about, and I mentioned it a little bit in my prior podcast, is the cordyceps mushroom. It's a very interesting mushroom. It in the wild, it grows inside caterpillars, but it can be cultivated on top of rice, and it actually has more potency. The rice, the species that grows on rice has a little more potency for some of the actives in the cordyceps than the cordyceps mushroom that grows on an insect. We have research studies over the years, and traditional Chinese medicine suggests that cordyceps is good for the kidneys and good for the lungs. Studies of cordyceps effect on the kidneys bear that out. So for cats, and the other part about cordyceps mushrooms is they're a type of mushroom that's related to both morels and to truffles. So they're very tasty. They taste a little bit like toast. So it's another mushroom like the lion's mane that would be very acceptable by most of our feline patients. And because it supports the kidneys, to me, the cordyceps mushroom sounds like the perfect feline, you know, wellness remedy, something that is safe to give over long periods of time. It has many benefits to the immune system and also can help to support the kidneys as well. But just as I think cordyceps is good for cats, I also think cordyceps is good for horses because it helps with their energy, but it also helps to support the lungs. One use for cordyceps in the cat could be for feline bronchial asthma, because in the Chinese medicine concept of things, it's the kidney relationship to the lungs that creates asthma. And in fact, when you do use the cordyceps mushroom in a traditional Chinese medical approach for asthma, it can be very effective, especially not as toxic as using a steroid for that. So these are the mushrooms, and there's a lot more than just these, but you know, over time I will be speaking on these, you know, at a variety of different conferences and webinars, and I'll be writing articles and doing studies and stuff. So I just want to help to educate my veterinary colleagues so they can find their own best use for these mushrooms in their practice.
Yeah, very helpful. I mean, there's not a lot of resources for us to go to. And I will tell to the listeners, the seminars and the webinars that Dr. Silver has given regarding mushrooms are very popular. So it definitely tells you that there's a want and need of those resources. And I was just telling Dr. Silver this offline, everybody, is that the pet parents are very much interested in this. Like on social media, they are asking me questions about it. And I was just telling Dr. Silver more about that pet parents are doing a lot of research about this. So I think it's great that we are aligned and get as much information as possible. So thank you for that.
And I appreciate you helping me get the word out, Adam. You know, I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast and also take your quiz so you can get your CE credit on at dvm360.com. And a big shout out and thank you to Dr. Rob Silver and all the great work that you're doing for Real Mushrooms.
Thank you, Adam. Any questions, you guys know how to reach me. Just direct them to me.
You got it. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.